Why, because in a way it always does mean that.
Oh, what a joke is the Statue of Liberty. When the Indians own the reservation and black folks still ain't free. Hate, war, and distrust is all our forefathers took time to sow. But this new generation's planting love and freedom, and peace is what they're gonna grow.
Hi, this is John Shuck. On the next Beloved Community, I welcome Cynthia McKinney, former Congresswoman and candidate for president. She speaks candidly about 9/11, the deep state, COINTELPRO, the Russians, the media, Israel, and more. Beloved Community, August 10th, Friday, 9 a.m. on KBOO.
You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio. I'm your host, Amanda Clem, and today our guest is multimedia installation artist and storyteller Willie Little. His exhibition, Kinfolk's Not Our Doll or Living Doll, is on view through August 25th at Froelich Gallery in the Pearl District at 714 Northwest Davis. Willie Little was born in rural North Carolina and currently is residing here in Portland. He received his Bachelor of Arts from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he has had solo exhibitions at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University, and Pounder Art Space in Los Angeles. Some of his notable group exhibitions have been at the Corcoran Gallery in Washington, D.C., the California Folk Art Museum in Los Angeles, and at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art Artists Galleries. So, thank you so much. We're so excited that you're here talking with us today, Willie. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. I am so grateful to be here to share my work, its inspiration, and my reason for making art.
I would love to dive into this because your work is just really seems like very deeply rooted in your own personal life.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
It absolutely is. It is mostly comes from personal history, personal stories, memories, loves, passions, and my personal truth. It's all about truth. So I always like to tell people I'm a multimedia installation artist and storyteller, and I am proudly from the rural South. I'm proudly from rural North Carolina. I'm proud that I came from a poor background. We were tobacco farmers. My father had a grocery store that was an illegal liquor house or a juke joint at night, and I grew beyond the shame of growing up poor. I grew beyond the shame of youth to the pride and of an adult, and I began telling stories about growing up in the rural South, and I created that juke joint exhibit that traveled around the country for several years and went to the Smithsonian, and it's just a really great homage to being proud of who I am and where I come from.
Yeah. One of the first pieces that I ever saw at Froelich Gallery earlier this year were the smaller houses, Little's Groceries, and on one side they just had little sayings, and they had flip side kind
absolutely.
Of. Absolutely. Very fun, but also very poignant memories too, and very strong memories.
Yeah, because the store had a dual purpose, a dual civic purpose. By day, it was that grocery store, and at night, he sold 50-cent shots of gin in a Dixie paper cup. So it's all about me having the lighter and the darker side. Each shack has that kind of the elements of the lighter and the darker side, but it's all done with a sense of humor, but also with history.
Yes. All of your pieces definitely have strong historical lessons within them, and I want to talk about that later.
Good.
I definitely I'm interested that you started or that your exhibitions like that were so large, and you were working on a really large scale, and then you kind of transitioned into more of the smaller wall pieces, the assemblages that we see at Froelich Gallery, and was that was that just a practical thing, going smaller, because building a full installation is such a, it's specific, right, to the sites and to where it can go and how it can travel?
Well, there are definitely several reasons why. The first exhibit, the first large exhibit, has been my life's work. And the thing is, that juke joint that I created in 1995 was actually the first serious work that was taken seriously. And I have received 3 grants to produce that work. And when there was an art administrator who asked me, she asked me, Willie, before you write this grant, mm-hmm. you should ask yourself, if you had unlimited funds, how would you want this exhibit to be presented? I said, well, okay. I read back in my seat too. And I said, well, if I had unlimited funds, I would want everyone to know, if they've never been in a juke joint, to know exactly what one is. She said, well, then write it like that then. I said, well, all right, I will. So then that was when I wrote this grant, to have it be the essence of what my father's store was. So it was a 320 square foot shotgun shack with hundreds of artifacts and 12 mannequins and a narrative audio track where I wrote and performed the stories. And it was really great. And I was in my 30s, and it traveled around the country for several years, and there was all kinds of problems with storage. And I just got older. So, I wanted to pare down because of the necessity of carrying all that with me and trying to be smart in telling stories and so that's probably one of the reasons why the work got a little smaller. But I still have this. I would love to continue to tell grand stories. But I think even with the new work, the scale is still large in the scope, but the work may not necessarily be as large, because I have a large painting that you can roll up, and it went across the country because I was able to roll it up.
That's very smart. And it's mounted to the wall with screws. It's huge. Well, let's talk about the assemblage a little bit, and all the materials that you've used to collect them. And there's one in particular called Official NRA Target, and These small assemblage on view at Froelich Gallery right now, all of them include these small Pickaninny Nodder dolls.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about that a little bit? I have a question about how you acquired them.
Oh, yes.
And,
okay, so what I wanted, let me tell you what, okay, for those of you who don't know what the exhibit is, it's called Nodder Doll Living Doll. And it's a social commentary a critique on today's American culture and how I see it. And it's about America's ridiculous and played out fixation with guns and race. But I want to paint a picture of this exhibit for those who have not yet seen it. Mm-hmm. There are 6 Nodder bobblehead dolls in the exhibit, 3 portraits, and all the Nodder dolls are irresistibly cute. Mm-hmm. Amanda, they're originally jet black Pickaninny seated baby dolls measuring 6.5 to 7.5 inches tall by 3.5 by 4.5 inches wide and deep. They have adorable red and pink lipstick. They're very Betty Boop, very Cupid doll, very Precious Moments with large playful eyes. Very cute, but loaded. Mm-hmm. They're Negrobelia dolls. They're made of chalk and ceramic, made in Japan in the 1950s, marketed to white America as a novelty, as a souvenir to, and as black Americana. But these dolls sit in the lotus position as the dolls are embracing and clutching degrading and insulting fruits. So one of the pieces that you asked about is titled Official NRA Target. It's 20 by 20 inches in a wooden shadow box. Inside, there's a black bobblehead doll, and her hair is spiked, dreadlock-like, made of oblong black beads, and there's an American flag scarf around her neck and a toy M60 gun propped on the wall to her side. And she's perched on top of a high-velocity gun shotgun shell box with an iron American eagle hung above her pretty head. And at the lip of the box, there's a copy of a signed official NRA Target document. And surrounding that are 2 rows of silver shotgun shell caps. It's a lot,
loaded.
Right?
It's loaded for such a small piece.
But the thing about that is the aesthetics.
Yes.
It's really beautiful.
Oh, it's so cute. It is cute.
And everything about the aesthetic, ever since I created the Juke Joint exhibit, is to have things be seductive by their beauty to draw you in so that you'll be more likely to see it before getting hit on the head with all the loaded messages, all the layers, all the metaphors going on. Mm-hmm. So that is what makes the work speak louder and say what I'm hoping to say and allow and encourage people to talk,
yeah,
and feel what's going on today.
Mm-hmm. I definitely had to do a closer look when I was noticing the hair on each doll was slightly different, and because you use beads,
yes,
to represent different traditional hairstyles and African American women, and I thought that was a really beautifully subversive way to do it, because I'm not familiar with those dolls as much. They're not mercifully, yeah, prevalent in our,
yeah,
culture. So I didn't know that. And at first I was like, oh, that's interesting. And
yeah,
then I looked closer and I thought, oh, this is,
yeah,
these are all very unique.
Yeah, because the thing is, in Black culture, we love our hair.
Mm-hmm.
And especially Black women love their hair. And we have so many different styles. And one of the styles that I wanted to create is the Bantu Nubian knots to crown their heads with beads, and Bantu is a comprehensive term to use to describe 300 to 600 ethnic groups in southern Africa. So it's a way to extol and celebrate the pride in African roots. And then they have other different elements I've used with the hair, but hair is so much in our culture, and I wanted to do that because the dolls, when they in their raw state, just all have the same kind of hair.
Mm-hmm. They do all have the same kind of hair, natural hair.
Yeah, it's like a little...
The mold is all
the
same.
The molded, nappy-headed, pickaninny doll.
Yeah.
That's what it all kind of looks like.
Right.
They're so precious, but they really are loaded. And the thing is, I don't know if you're going to ask, but the first time I saw those dolls, I said, my eyes got, I saw them in 2002 in Charlotte at a flea market.
Okay,
I lived in Charlotte.
I wanted to know where you got them.
Yes, yes. So when I first saw them at the flea market, my eyes got as big as a Kennedy 50-cent piece, as I always say. I was like, oh my God, look how precious. Oh, and I said, oh. Wait a minute. So, I said, they're really cute. I said, but you know, I think I need to do something with these dolls, because there ain't no way these dolls were made for anything cute and anything benign.
Right.
So I had to change their purpose. And I did so with a really great exhibit in Charlotte. But this time I wanted to go a little bit deeper and to reclaim and represent them. And to discuss and reveal the subversive nature of racism, past and present, in this work. So
yeah,
it's definitely a piece that's relevant and timely.
They are.
With what's going on in this country today.
Yeah. They are each very unique in their aesthetic and their appearance. And there's one that even has the neck coils.
Yes.
And so there's just, each one has its own, own loaded story that it wants you,
yeah,
to ask.
Yeah.
You know,
and
what is this all about?
And I'm glad you asked about the neck coils. That piece is, I'm using a cheese grater, and it looks like the doll has her head is cut off,
guillotine.
But she has the metal rings around her neck, and those neck rings are an illusion of grace and eligibility to wed in the South Africa in Ndebele tribe in Zimbabwe. So that was another way of showing pride, and I've just my desire to reclaim the dolls and to make them something beautiful, but have the message be really on point.
Yes, the beauty standards are exacting for a lot of cultures, but in this particular case, they're beautiful still. They're very cute, and they're like altars, kind of. That's one of the
yes.
first recognition that I had with them. They were each just little goddesses that needed to this moment, but they also had a very important message when you looked carefully at them, all the pieces that surround it. You pick up on that.
And the thing about the, because I don't know if you noticed that they're all women.
Yes.
So the whole idea is it's all about the black woman. And I posed the question, what if these Nodder dolls, these bobblehead dolls, were living and breathing women of the 21st century? What would their challenges be? Just as these dolls are clutching these insulting fruits, what does the black woman clutch
in present day? Which would be then
the gun culture. And then there are lots of chains attached to the figures in some way. And my question is, are the objects in the piece used to be adored or feared? Are the chains restrictive or leveraged? That is the question I wanted to ask in creating and presenting the chains in the work.
And the chains are, this is a good transition to one of the biggest paintings that you see right as soon as you walk in the door, called American Obsession. It's really large. It's larger than life size.
Yes.
And it's a portrait of an African American woman in a beautiful gown with a really large bustle.
Yes.
And so we know now that it's modeled after Sarah Bartman, who also went by the Hottentot Venus, who has toured around, exploited all around Europe. And the figure, though, is like a beautiful. She looks like a Hollywood actress. She looks like she's on the red carpet.
Yes.
And there's chains that are woven through the canvas at her waist.
Yes.
And it pulls on the canvas down. There's like very heavy weight. And man, that visual symbol really beautiful, like beautiful and haunting.
Well, thank you. And that piece, there's so many things about that piece that are important to me. That was in my vision for creating the work. I wanted to create a large piece. And at the time, I was living in Oakland, and I lived in a duplex I created my work out of my bedroom. And I kept asking the universe, please give me a space so I can make work. And I got an email from the McCall Center for Visual Arts saying, Willie, you've been invited to Charlotte to participate in a 2-week pop-up residency. And I'm like, oh my God, yes. So I know what I'm going to do. So I did, I created this piece. It's an 8-foot-tall painting of a beautiful Nubian princess. She has the Nubian knots. She's beautiful. She's elegant. She has this white gown with a corseted, bustled dress. And there is a chain wrapped around her waist, and the big, heavy chain is attached to a red AK-47. And the red AK-47 is so interesting because in the stipulation of the grant was to create something that you've never created before. So I had never made anything. I've always used found objects, which is something else I wanted to talk about also.
Yeah.
But this time I had to make this gun, and I fashioned it out of a laser cut. Aluminum pieces that were pressed together to make this replica of an AK-47. So we had the template, and we created that. And so the chain is attached to the AK-47, and it's wrapped to her. So the question was: Is it restricting her, or is she using it as leverage? And the whole thing about the Hottentot Venus that is so important to me. I created a gown before in another exhibit. It was called the Teabagger gown that was Victorian bustled. But the whole thing about the inspiration for the Victorian bustle was the Hottentot, and to me, that is the epitome of colonial exploitation and the commodification of black people. And that's one of the messages about that piece. And also, one of the haunting things about this piece was that at the end of the residency, I created the piece, and we exhibited it. And the night I was looking at it, I wasn't really pleased with the finished product. So I had a few hours before I was going to fly back to Oakland, and it was 2 a.m. I was in the colony painting, working on it, fine-tuning it, and I had no idea that night was the night of the massacre in Florida. Ooh. At the Pulse nightclub.
Oh my goodness.
All those people were murdered, and I closed shop, packed my bags, and flew back having no idea that all this was going on, which made me even more infuriated about the whole issue with guns. Yeah. and the gun violence in America is just actually, it breaks your heart.
It does.
It's really senseless.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. That is a incredibly sad story, and just makes your work all the more, you know, prescient and important to see, I think, for everybody out there. And so I had another question about the other piece, the other painting that's opposite of American Obsession.
Yes, yes.
It's titled Strange Fruit. We don't have to talk too much about it, but the fruit is, okay, so it's a portrait of another beautiful black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got big, beautiful red lips. And she's holding a piece of fruit in the shape of a watermelon that's got a backwards mounted American flag on it. And that is, you know, something that I knew in my subconscious, that watermelons and these fruits, mm-hmm, are associated in a really derogatory way. But I didn't really I never really knew why.
Yes, and there's a story that is so, it's a really horrible story. Because, and so, the watermelon was actually a symbol of our black people's freedom. Once we were freed from enslavement, black people grew, sold, and ate watermelon as a symbol of pride. And Southern whites, who were threatened by this newfound freedom, took away this new joyful ownership of this by insinuating that blacks were lazy, shiftless, and subjected that whole notion of the watermelon and into ads and into,
yeah,
art,
and just slipped it right in,
and slipped it right in into minstrelsy.
Yeah.
So it has a bittersweet fruit. So in that painting,
yes, and the flag,
yeah,
the details.
In that painting, the black woman is clutching a backward American flag with stars and stripes. And as you look closely at the stars, many of them are shaped like Klan hoods, as it kind of represents the different sizes and many different facets of racism in America. And at the end of the chain that's wrapped around her wrist is a studded apple in a ladle. It's nourishing her. It's a studded apple, and the apple is a symbol, as I have reclaimed it, the symbol of knowledge, and knowledge equals power. So all the elements have messages of resilience, strength, and power at the same time.
I love it. It's really a beautiful message, and in a really hard to look at painting. It's really vibrant. It's really intense, and her eyes are really big and,
yes,
pleading in a way. And also, there was a small detail that I noticed, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but that her ears were pierced.
Oh, they were pierced. They were pierced, and actually, and someone else asked me that question. They were pierced, and it looks like, people ask what's going on. Well, actually, there was a little editing going on, because she had earrings that were made of horse bridles, and I took them off because it was just too busy. It was really beautiful, but I was like, is this too much still going on with her? So, but just the whole notion that her ears are pierced are really, you know, still says some other things.
Yeah, it's just another tether.
Another tether. And the whole notion of the work, I do want people to look at the objects, because the objects are over there to speak and say a lot of things that I want to say, but I want people to see if they can interpret on their own,
yeah,
and learn and discuss and talk about this work, because social commentary is all about that, yeah, encouraging dialogue.
I thought it was really interesting and a really wonderful and wonderfully generous piece that you offered to the exhibition, which is an explanation of many of the pieces and the materials that you used, which you don't often see artists including in their exhibitions, and it's even a curator is hard pressed to put it in there.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really it's a really wonderful piece to start out with and start your research, basically, if you don't know about any of these things, if you're struck by any of these images,
that was my my desire, was to talk about the to kind of educate people on why I created the work, what the history is behind some of the choices for the objects and so many elements I used, because a lot of people might not know.
Yeah. Speaking of elements, I do want to ask you about the found objects, because we didn't talk too much about the other assemblages that are part of the exhibition, which are those seem to me like the most personal. Mm-hmm. Then what's that, your handwriting?
Yes, it's my handwriting. I'm glad you. I wanted to say I'm so grateful that Charles Froelich, the gallery owner, this was genius of him to actually have my first large exhibition at the Froelich Gallery include early work from 20 years ago. Because
that works for 20 years old?
Yes,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, Kim Folks is from 20 years ago, and the last piece I created for this Not at All Living Doll exhibit was finished in 2018. So there are two distinct works. The first one, Kim Folks, is trying to make sense out of my life, but the latter is trying to make sense out of what's going on in America regarding race and class and gender as I see it. But the commonalities of the work is this: they're speaking my truth. They're to inspire, to educate, to document. Kim Folks is documenting a fading part of the rural South, and the Not a Doll, Living Doll exhibit is documenting the social dilemmas of contemporary America. So those things are kind of bind those pieces together, and they hold up. I'm so glad the Kim Folks pieces hold up, because as in the Kim Folks exhibit is about the extraordinary nature of everyday life on my family's tobacco farm in eastern North Carolina. And I use the found objects. The found objects, they find me. You know, they come to me in a very spiritual way, as if I don't ever have to worry. And for example, work and words come to me as if they come, came through my ancestors. All the stories, I would put a pad and paper beside my bed, and the words would just come out, and I would just write them down. And it was just like, and the words were like poetry, and the handwriting is channeled through an old soul, such as my grandmother. Grandma Florian was born in 1897, so that's why the work, my handwriting, is like that of an old soul. And also, it's inspired by folk art, outsider art. That's why the work looks so, you know, because some folk art can be some of the most sophisticated work.
Mm.
And little people know that, but it has many layers and essences.
That's right. I agree with that. I was looking at it's a, I don't know how large that is, 25, 40?
It's probably 38 to 40 and 24 to 26 inches wide.
They're wooden frames, they're shadow boxes, and they've got a pitched roof like a little house. And then in front there's a window frame, and then behind it, it looks like a chalkboard, or just a, you know, it's painted black, and there's writing in grandma's style.
Yeah, in grandma's style. So the notion of creating the paint with it looks really gritty, because I wanted it to represent the earthy nature of where I came from. So the paint is an acrylic paint with gritty elements in the background, and the handwriting is just as if it is conjured from my grandmother. And this piece is about my grandmother. And grandma was born in 1897, and she was as salty. She had a salty disposition, and just to match the salty snuff that she dipped, she had a comeback with, you know, she had a sharp tongue. She had a comeback for nearly every occasion. So it's all about her dipping snuff, and she was so no nonsense, and she was absolutely a pistol. She would, if you ask her, you know, how old are you? So I'm old enough to drink water without getting choked. Old enough to drink milk without getting without spitting up. Well, don't get mad. Are you mad? Grandma would come back, scratch your back and get glad. You reckon it's going to rain today? Don't say you reckon, because you just don't know. If it had been true, I would have told you so.
She just grandma-isms.
Yeah,
like,
she had plenty of grandma-isms.
I love it. That's good lessons. It's like a good literal window into that relationship, you know, that you have with your grandmother. So I would really encourage everyone to go check that out. The exhibition will be up at Froelich Gallery through August 25th, and Willie will be giving an artist talk on Saturday, August 11th at 2 p.m.
Yes, at 2 p.m. on the 11th, and please, I encourage you to come ask questions and laugh with me and cry with me, and please check out my website. It's willielittle.com. It's with an I-E, and my Instagram is willielittlearch1234.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again, Willie. It was a real pleasure to have you on today. You've been listening to Art Focus with Amanda Clem on KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is volunteer-powered. We have a dynamic community of 500 volunteers doing everything from front desk work, janitorial work, community reporting, hosting information booths, clerical support, news writing, documentary making, operating soundboards, engineering and computer help,